Good evening, grave robbers, and welcome back to the television graveyard. We are your TV necromancers, Lara Prince and Noah Houlihan. We have come here tonight to examine spirits of past television shows to find out which ones could be resurrected, should be resurrected, and which ones should just stay doomed. This is a podcast in which we'll analyze the history, the hype, and the aftermath of shows that ran only one season or only one episode. With me as always is TV's Noah Houlihan.
I'm selling lifesavers for 55 cents because I'm running a scam. It's a scam where I sell lifesavers for 55 cents. And I take the extra 5 cents and I put that away. This way I can build a huge pile of money because I'm selling lifesavers for 55 cents. It's a brilliant scam because I get to rip off everyone in New York because I'm selling lifesavers for 55 cents. 55 cents for the lifesavers.
So today we're going to be talking about Norman's Corner from 1987.
Yes, this is a unique bit of media that shouldn't exist. I don't like it.
Okay.
So this is a creation of Larry David, and it's very Larry David.
It is.
Before he knew what he was doing.
There is a lot of proto-Seinfeld energy in this.
There's some proto-Seinfeld energy. There's some proto-Curb Your Enthusiasm energy in this. And it is starring one Gilbert Godfrey, a young Gilbert Godfrey, before his voice is really, like,
Gilbert Godfrey.
Gilbert Godfrey, yeah. Because we know at this point that wasn't his real voice. That was his stage voice.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't quite have it all fleshed out yet. He's not quite a Iago yet.
No. He won't. Iago is about 4 years in the future when this is happening.
Really? Only 4 years?
Yes. Because this is reviewed in 1988 when it aired. I said 1987 because I think that's when it was produced.
Mm.
But it aired in 88 and Aladdin is 92.
Okay.
Not quite 4 years to the day, but very close.
So, I don't even know what to do with this show. Because basically,
this is very peculiar.
This is just kind of a series of things happening at a newsstand. And Gilbert Godfrey does not stop talking.
God, he doesn't.
And, like, basically what will happen is he will have an interaction with someone at a newsstand. And the interaction will end. He will keep speaking. And then someone else will enter. And then that interaction will begin.
Yeah.
That will happen ad nauseum.
Yes, it is exhausting.
So,
I will say, it opens on very well done opening credits.
Okay.
Especially for what we're used to with pilots. Pilots do not tend to have very well thought out opening credit sequences because it's something they're like, we'll do that if we get picked up.
Right.
But because this did air, this does have a very well thought out sequence.
Refresh my memory.
The cast appears in news articles from one of the newspapers on the newsstand.
Oh, yes. That was pretty cool.
You also get a lot of information about who people are and what people are doing. It establishes the cast. And it's very prominent that it's written by Larry David, which is nothing in 1988, but is exciting to see in 2024.
Yeah. So, my first note, and I don't know if this was like an intentional, like, foreshadowy thing, or if they were trying to make a point, but somebody pays in change, and Norman starts yelling,
"Hey, they got a dollar's worth in change. They got it. Why do they have to give it to me in change? I hate change."
Yes.
And I was like, oh, is that the thing we're doing? Like, I hate change? I want the status quo. Is that what the story is?
Yeah, I used to know a guy who did a bit about how he didn't like the new quarters because he feared change.
What is this? What is this right now? What are we doing?
I used to know a guy who did that bit.
Oh, really? And who was that?
He was like this comic out of Jersey.
So listen. I used to do a joke. And the joke was, I used to do it as my closer.
Oh.
Don't make that noise. The joke was, I would go, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to leave. So it's time for the best joke of my set. Have you seen the new pennies? They have like a shield on the back of them. I hate them. But then again, I fear change. Boom! Standing ovation. And the joke was I was ending my set with my worst joke. That was the bit. So don't come at me. That was the point. And are you making fun of me for thinking there might be foreshadowing in this?
No.
That wasn't criticism. That was just me being like, is this what the theme of this is going
to
be?
It just reminded me of your joke, and we don't have a lot to talk about because this episode's weird. I'm desperately grasping for content, much like this episode.
All right. Acceptable. So we learn little things about Norman. We learn that his brothers are dead. I don't know why that's important, but it comes up. I also want to talk about how weird this is shot in that it is a newsstand, like, on a set.
Yes.
So there's, like, fake buildings behind them. But yet they still choose to rotate the camera so we're seeing from Norman's perspective, which means we're looking out into the street, which means they do bad green screen.
And, like, really bad green screen.
And there's no need. Like, just shoot it like a sitcom.
There's no need to really look at the street. And everything looks very clean and very weird.
Yeah, there's not a shot that uses the green screen that's worth the hassle.
The other odd thing about how this is filmed is it's filmed in HD.
Yeah, you mentioned that, and that's so odd.
It's all over the credits, too.
I mean, it was in widescreen.
Yeah.
So there you go. I guess they thought this was going to be on the big screen.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know why it was like that.
Yeah, I mean, like, there weren't televisions that could properly air this yet.
No. So, God, I don't even know how to, like, go about this.
So,
I found this show so difficult to follow.
I mean, I'll just go through the notes that I have.
Okay.
If you want. We have our one, like, kind of plot point, which is one of his friends is dating a Japanese woman.
Yes.
And he asks Norman to go with him because she has a friend, so it can be a double date.
Yeah.
And Norman doesn't like doing anything. So he, like, kind of whines, and he eventually says,
look, I'm supposed to see them again tonight. You want to come?
Okay, let's make a definite plan. If I'm there, I'm there, and if not, then I'm not.
Missed the commitment. Okay, yes, I'll be right back.
Yeah, and he also says some, like, fairly racist things.
Yeah.
Of course, I do so well with Japanese women. I do incredible. I mean, I tell them I hate Truman, and they rip their clothes off.
I don't understand that joke.
I believe it's because Truman was president when they dropped the bombs in Japan.
Oh. Fun.
Yeah, it was Truman. I was second guessing myself.
Yeah.
So I looked it up. Yes, it was Harry Truman. Mm. So, and that joke is the equivalent to, I always, like, think about the time in relationship to each other,
mm-hmm.
especially, like, the older I get and the more I can kind of, like, think about it.
Right.
Of, like, okay, this would have been about a 42-year-old joke. Let's go back 42 years. That'd be, like, 1982.
Right.
So that'd be, like, me in a sitcom today alluding to, like, whatever the biggest historical event in 1982 was.
Huh.
I mean, I don't think anything happened in 82 that was akin to this. Because obviously the dropping of the atomic bomb is one of the notable events of the 20th century.
Yeah, but I mean, I watched I Love the 80s. I don't know, Waco? Making a joke about Waco?
It'd be like if I made comments about, like, the drugs and the Tylenol.
Oh, yeah.
That's like the... Because most of what happened in 1982, giving it a quick glance over, is nothing on this level. It's like, oh, Late Night with David Letterman makes its debut.
Mm.
It's like, that's nice.
So, I believe that they're setting up some sort of plot here. This is going to be important to my reaction to this show. Will he or will he not go on this date? We then get this really weird non sequitur where it is a father and a daughter asking about the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
This is where the Rocky Horror Picture Show is, right?
I don't know.
Let's look in the paper. how much is that?
Oh, please, just go ahead and look at one.
We're from Chicago.
Oh, Chicago, yes. Great town, Chicago. It's my kind of town, Chicago. It's a town that won't let you down. And Denver, oh, Denver I think of as a great salad town. And then Pittsburgh, oh, had a heck of a time in the burg.
So odd. Because this is clearly morning.
Yeah.
And, like, Rocky Horror, at this point in time, is generally a midnight show.
And
she also looks 13.
She's very young. And then they kind of have this weird conversation about how much he loves the city of Chicago. And it kind of reads like he's trying to be genuine here.
I guess.
Like, it doesn't feel like he's making fun of her. It doesn't feel like he doesn't like her. It's like this is just how this man communicates with other people.
Yeah.
And he just kind of keeps talking until her father pulls her away.
Yeah, it's very weird.
Yeah, I don't understand why. And then my next note is Norman just talks, no plot yet.
Yeah, then it turns to claymation. And Gottfried starts to whine to what I assume is supposed to be his agent, Morty.
Well, yeah, because he makes a joke, and that because I wrote it down.
Well, let me see. All right, I'll have some coffee. It makes my life go faster.
A coffee.
It makes my life go faster. Did you get that line?
A coffee.
It makes my life go faster.
Yeah.
And he thinks this joke is so good that he then has this weird claymation-like fantasy about his agent trying to buy that joke off of him. Or another comic trying to buy that joke off of him. It's hard to tell. It's gross claymation.
Hey, Norman, give me that coffee line. How much you want for it? I'm sorry, Morty. I'm sorry. I can't give you the coffee line. That line about how coffee makes my life go faster, it just, I can't part with it. You're breaking my heart, Morty, but I can't part with that line. Come on, Norman.
Yeah, like it's badly done, clumsy.
I would argue, is it badly done? Or is this what claymation looked like in this era? Because it, to me, it looks very California Raisins.
I mean, it looks like inexpensive. Like, it doesn't look like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. It doesn't
look
like...
Was that claymation or is that puppets?
I believe that's claymation. You know, I think that's just... I'm conflating claymation and stop motion.
Yeah, like, this, to me, I think it's just of the time where, like, claymation was big because of the California Raisins.
Yeah.
So it's that weird kind of like everything looks kind of wet and like with every movement, somebody's thumb actually had to move something. So their faces kind of morph with every movement because someone's hand actually had to move them.
Yeah.
It's just, it's weird. And like, it's hard not for that to not come off as gross.
Yeah. Especially like, it's a very muted color palette. Cause it's really just like flesh tones and then mostly like gray and brown tones in the set.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of looks a little muddy.
Yeah, it's not fun to look at. My next note is my head's going to explode. Because I have no idea what's going on at this point.
Yeah, Morty keeps offering to pay Norman money for the line, "Coffee makes my life go faster." And then Norman complains and... then we're back to the stand, and I feel like it's supposed to be a fantasy sequence.
Yeah, it's like this weird fantasy daydream sequence, because I guess there wouldn't always be a customer, but he doesn't shut up, so we had to find a way to keep him talking. There's also some sort of plot point that a girl that used to come to the stand was this girl, Gail, who's now a successful model. So in our next scene, Norman's talking to the magazine she's on. So it's another like weird dream sequence. And she's kind of like, digging on him. Like, it's flirtatious, but it's also not real. And it's a conversation with a magazine.
You know, Gail, I wanted to apologize about last night, but I felt the need to be alone.
That's all right, Norman. I did some sculpting. Can you stop by tonight, please?
There's this through line. I understand that you missed it because everything's talking so fast. Is all these people being like, did you hear about Gail? She's on the magazines now. She's real stuck up. Like, there's this feeling of like, there's this girl who has made it, and thus they all hate her.
Yeah, okay. So, because he talks to these two women, and then he talks to the magazine, and then again another fantasy sequence. And this is a weird fantasy sequence, because then, like, he goes to her, she talks him into going to her apartment after he gives a lecture on wine tasting.
Yeah.
And then when he gets there, she's like, I have to go, my brother was in a car accident.
Yeah, this is such a weird dream sequence.
But, like, the other dream sequence was him being a comedian and then, like, his agent trying to pay him out for a line and he didn't want to give it up.
Yeah, I don't understand any of this. And then some guy walks in and starts doing stand-up.
If I'm not in bed by 11, I go home.
He's just a friend.
I'm standing on Broadway. I found a guy's hand in my pocket. I said, what do you want? He said, I want a match. I said, why don't you ask for it? Yeah, I don't talk to strangers. Fellow walks into a psychiatrist. He says, nobody talks to me. He says, next. I solved a parking problem. I bought a parked car.
Well, to me, the idea is that, like, this guy is so broken that even in his fantasy sequences, things don't go right.
Maybe.
That was what I got from it.
Okay.
That's just what I got.
It's nice that you got something from it, because my next note is plot, please, !
And then she comes up to him.
Yeah, Gail then actually shows, like, oh, it's so confusing that we're trying our best here, but people talk about Gail. Then he has a fantasy talking to a magazine that Gail's in. Then he has a fantasy where he's actually with Gail. And then Gail actually shows up.
Yeah. And she seems perfectly nice. And then Norman just talks about kites for a while.
Yeah, they have a nice little chat about kites.
And Norman just babbles.
Yeah, Norman babbles like he has been doing. But, like, Gail does those things where she, like, looks off and, like, looks to the side and giggles to herself. Like, all the things you do when you're around someone that you're a little shy with because you have a crush on them.
Beautiful day, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful day. It's a good kite-flying day. It's a beautiful day to go to the park and fly a kite and hold hands and fly a kite and then, like, run around and get hit in the face with a frisbee.
Can I have a chapstick? Cherry, please?
Yeah, cherry flavored. Yeah, that's my... I eat about 5 of these a day.
Yeah, okay.
And it's not a fantasy. This is actually happening.
Yeah, like, this is the part that's in real life.
So it's like, oh, does he actually have a shot with Gail? And then, like, after she leaves, we will not see her again.
No.
Like, the hot dog guy will walk by and be like, huh, Gail was just here. She didn't even say hi. She's stuck up now. It's like, wait. Why is everyone weird?
Because then, like, he goes and takes his lunch break. And it becomes immediately another fantasy sequence.
Yes, he leaves someone else in charge. I think the hot dog guy.
And yeah. He gets served a partially eaten apple. He berates the waiter. And he is talking to Julius, who in the dream sequence is ostensibly his boss.
Yes.
And he eats like a nasty tuna sandwich. And in the fantasy, Julius fires him.
Yes.
So he gets canned, stood up, and gets his joke sold in his fantasies. This is how his fantasies go.
Yeah, it might be something about this is how I see myself, because, or that he just doesn't belong in this type of world. Because there's also a whole thing where they give him a half-eaten apple.
Yeah.
And he says, what's this? I told you I wanted this to come out later.
Yeah.
So, like, he's not upset that he's not getting the whole apple. So, metaphor.
Well, then the metaphor gets significantly more ham-handed.
Yeah.
Because when Norman gets fired, he then begs Julius to let him go back on the road. And his sons show up. Did you catch his sons?
Oh, I caught this. I caught this.
Pop. What? Biff. Happy. My boys. What are you two doing here?
What are sons' names,
His
Alex?
Sons were Biff and Happy, which are the name of the two sons from Arthur Miller's A Death of a Salesman.
Which also incorporates hallucinations vividly in the plot. And Biff counsels Norman to open a newsstand. So I'm like, okay, this is kind of playing on this, like, tragedy aspect of The Death of a Salesman, like the hallucinations. I'm like, okay, for a minute, I think I get it.
Well, I feel like there was also something in the business lunch where it was mentioned that whatever job he had, he kind of inherited.
Yeah.
Like, that was his right. And there was the whole stuff about his brothers being dead. And I think this is meant to say something like, this man has no family legacy at this point. It's
right.
Just him and it's a newsstand.
Right.
But I don't know how we're supposed to feel about it.
I mean, and there is a point in the dream sequence where Gail walks by on the arm of another man.
Right.
So, like, he doesn't get the girl. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm trying.
Yeah, I'm looking at my notes. My next note is, I feel like taking notes is pointless. And if we were to turn it off right now, it wouldn't matter for the podcast.
Well, then I'm like, okay, the guy who's trying to get Norman to go on the double date comes back. They joke about looking up people in the Yellow Pages and how desperate people put themselves in the Yellow Pages so you can look them up.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, truly hot people don't need to.
Right.
They don't use the phrase hot people because I don't think we called people hot in the 80s. But people put the boxes around their names if they're really desperate.
Right.
And then a guy buys candy. And I think this is, like, around when your weird rant.
Oh, you missed one kind of important... Nothing in this is important, but there's okay. Something I'm going to bring up. You missed the homeless girl.
She's at the very end. She's after the candy.
Is she?
Yes. She's alluded to, but we don't see her yet.
Oh, I thought the Lifesavers was the ending.
No, the guy on the diet buys the candy.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. So there's a guy... This is such a weird thing. There's a guy who shows up to buy candy, and Norman's like, I can't sell you candy. You're on a diet.
You told me I couldn't.
You told me I couldn't. But if I were to look over here and those candies were to disappear, and when I looked back, 50 cents were here, there's nothing I could do about it. Which, like, I don't understand this at all. Because, like, what is this dog and pony show you're doing? Like, wouldn't it help him more to actually not sell him the candy?
Yeah.
Like, what? I don't understand what we're supposed to take away from this. But the guy ends up buying two candies and leaving a dollar, and Norman freaks out.
Yeah. And then we meet Lucy, and she is homeless.
Yes.
And she's apparently just returning, but we don't know from when or what.
I believe she said she was in a hospital.
Yeah.
Because she mentioned having a TV.
And there's banter, where she calls Norman a menace to society.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives her a pack of cigarettes while kind of ranting at her, like, you can't always come here. One of these days I'm going to put my foot down. You can't come here and expect cigarettes every day. And she tells him she missed him.
Yeah, this is like a nice little moment.
Well, it ends on the only real human connection Norman has all day.
Yeah.
Like, everything else is these weird transactions and, like, quasi-interactions, but this, like, one very real moment between two people. So it ends on kind of a high point.
Yeah, she was very interesting. I liked her. Did you notice her weird lipstick?
I did not.
She had, like, Lady Gaga lipstick in that, like, only the middle was painted.
I mean, that was very, in the, like, 1920s as well.
Okay.
Gaga didn't invent that.
And as, like, a very, like, nice little moment that I thought really told a nice little story. I'm really grasping for something good about this show.
Yeah.
Is when you see her walk away, she checks the payphone to see if there's any change left in the phone.
Oh.
And, like, that's, like, a nice little character bit of, like, she's homeless and she needs money, so she might as well check.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, all right. So, like, for a moment, I'm like, I could see more of this character and like this.
Yeah.
Then we get the friend from the beginning coming back, begging Norman to go with him on the date.
Yeah.
And explains to Norman that he has to come. The other girl doesn't speak English. And Norman's like, oh, that's perfect for me. I can just explain everything to her. That's perfect. I'll be there. And I was like, okay, thank God. We're finally getting to the plot. What is going to happen on this? Oh, the credits.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yep.
Well, this fever dream is over.
Yeah. This aired as part, like, do you remember when we watched The Action Family? How that was part of a greater series that aired in Cinemax? That was
yes.
Essentially, like, attempting to dig around for pilots. This aired as one of those.
Okay.
And the LA Times gave it an extremely favorable review.
Why?
I don't know.
Like,
featuring cameos by Henny Youngman, Arnold Stang and others, taped with a high-def TV system, a sitcom first, that gives it a bright look and meandering into claymation and filmed fantasies that sometimes slow things down a little too much, Norman's Corner is very different and very funny.
It's not very funny, first off. Secondly, I guess at the time, there's a lot of innovative things going on.
Yeah, I mean, we're at, like, the advent of cable TV and, like, that late 80s, early 90s heyday.
So I guess, like, I could totally see, like, in a way, it's kind of like, ready for this one? This is the Piranha 3D of the 80s in that, like, it's not great, but it's the first 3D movie. So you're like, wow, it was like there was a piranha right here.
Yeah, I could see that. I think there's also this, like, this kind of comedy. Like, we're looking at it as this isn't very good. But we can go watch... This is a crappy rough draft of Seinfeld. Like, you can see... Like, it centers on one guy and, like... It seems like he might be a comedian based on the dream sequence with the agent.
Right.
So my thought was, like, okay, is this, like, a proto-Seinfeld? And it doesn't work. But I could kind of see the Seinfeld, like, early DNA in it.
It's just, it's an interesting choice to be like, the gimmick is Norman never stops talking. Because all that means is you are never giving your audience a break.
Oof. And this show does not.
And like, a break in a comedy is a laugh.
Yeah.
Like, the way that that comedy is structured is you build tension and then the laugh is the release. Without giving the audience time to laugh, there is no time for us to release anything or really comprehend or reflect upon anything.
No.
And by giving so much of the show no value, like the girl talking about Rocky Horror.
She does not come back.
Like, yeah, that has no value in the rest of this. You could remove this and it would still pretty much be the same show. By telling your audience early, like, hey, these characters are going to show up and be pointless, I don't have the urge to then invest in any new character that reaches out. Like, anyone else that shows up, it's like, well, what's the point of this?
This was rough.
And I have to ask, is this Waiting for Godot?
My only evidence that it might be is the Death of a Salesman aspect of, like, if I tried hard enough, could I find classical drama references in all of these? Like, were some Maybe. Of them, like, were some of these just kind of lost on me because I haven't been, you know, studying my American drama?
Or your 1982 culture.
Like, because Death of a Salesman is, like, mid-century. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of, like, trying to remember if there was something where, like, he goes on a date with a girl and then she has to leave because her brother was in an accident. I'm like, is that an O'Neill? I mean, there's definitely, like, a little bit of Our Town vibes in that just one guy won't shut up for an entire half hour.
Yeah.
I say this is someone who loves Our Town.
I hate Our Town.
I love Our Town, but I get why you don't like it.
In college, we would call this a razor blade comedy. Because this was something we've always, like, joked about doing and we never did it. The idea of taking Waiting for Godot and taking a razor blade to it so that all the lines were in a completely different order and then just pulling them out of a hat and reading them, it wouldn't make any more or less sense as a show if you did Waiting for Godot that way. This is a razor blade comedy. Like, it's just a bunch of stuff happening. If you rearrange the order of the events for the most part, except for maybe him finding out that the girl doesn't speak English, this would be the same show.
Yeah, it's not very good.
No, I hated this. And it was a hate that as I was watching this, I was like, this is bad. I don't think this is going to be a good episode of Stay Doomed either. Because there's no way that I can express to you how relentless this was.
It is really difficult. I did not enjoy this. I had such a hard time following it. Especially the way since I have to take notes, this was horrific.
Oh yeah.
For me personally, taking the notes and everything. This sucked.
Yeah. There are times where if it's a heavy note show, I will, like, put it on in the background again and watch it while I'm, like, cleaning or doing something else. I could not bring myself to press play on this again.
It was...
But if you want to watch it, a link is available in the description. I'd love to hear that, you know, you loved it and that we're wrong.
Yeah, like, if there's something you loved about it, by all means. And, like, we say this as people who like Gilbert Gottfried. Like,
yeah, I love Gilbert
If you
Gottfried.
Like Gilbert Gottfried's comedy, you're not really going to get anything out of this. This isn't Gilbert Gottfried doing stand-up.
It's Gilbert Gottfried doing Larry David.
Yeah.
Ooh. And that's not really a good mix. To stay doomed for me, what's your verdict?
Oh, it's a very much a stay doomed for me. Especially when you think about the outcome being if this show took off, we wouldn't have Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very interesting because allegedly when Larry David was pitching Seinfeld, someone went, oh, did you write that piece of crap with Gilbert Gottfried in it? So like this show did go poorly.
So I think that's going to wrap things up here. But I do want to say this. I haven't had a chance to bring this up until now. A lot of good feedback on last week's episode.
Was there?
There's a lot of comments. Because we also did one of those pause games where I said, pause right now and tell me what you think they're saying. Mark Fanboy X says, my guess is a hot chick, which was the misdirect. Nancy B says, my guess is something Star Wars related, which it was. It was Boba Fett. Mark Fanboy X also says, on a side note, as a total nerd myself, this show sounds horrible. We also got a comment from Kidney saying, never thought I would see more Eltingville Club content on YouTube. And we got some notes that the books were way better. It is a classic underground comic crosshatching. The pilot was just bad. Just too in-jokey for general audiences.
Which is kind of the vibe I got from what I saw the book when I was doing research. That the book was not the same animal.
Yes. And Mr. Outside says, I remember in high school my jaw dropping when they mentioned Star Blazer's wave motion gun in a trivia off. Looking forward to listening to this as dog walking fodder. So,
what kind of dog?
To Mr. Outside, we say hello to your dog.
What kind of dog?
We'd like more information about your dog.
Please. Dog, dog, dog.
So, that killed a couple minutes. Thank you so much for your comments. That's going to do it. I don't have much else to say about Norman's Corner. Back to the corner with you. We don't want anything to do with you. What are we doing next week? Because we actually did decide what we're doing next week.
We are doing Scorch.
Yes!
It's got a puppet.
It's got a puppet. It's about a dragon. It's 6 episodes long. And I believe we actually promised Scorch before.
Did we?
I think there was actually an episode where we were like, we're doing Scorch, and then we came back and we're like, it turns out Scorch wasn't a pilot. It had 6 episodes. So we didn't have time. We did something else. I think Scorch is 6 episodes, but we're only going to be doing the 3 that are available.
Yes, because 3 of them are unaired, and to my knowledge, unable to be found. Yes.
Lost media. So maybe this will be yet another thing that we'll say is lost media and then will magically appear through the influence of Stay Doomed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to end up in another Blame It on George video. In any case, thank you so much for listening. If you're having a good time, be sure to check out the Patreon at patreon.com/plus2comedy. Where can people find us?
You can email us at thestaydoomedshow@gmail.com or on Facebook and Twitter at Stay Doomed.
And if you want to talk to me about anything else, just anything else besides Norman's Corner, I'm at plus2comedy on Twitter.
Honestly, don't talk to me. I need like a few minutes of quiet.
Yes.
But if you're looking for me, I'm at Priorities. Until next time, stay doomed.
Oh, and also shout-outs to Amusing Moose for being a super cool patron.
Yeah.
Yeah, hi. You're super cool.
Yeah.